With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Sans Pants Radio, a far cry for help.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need.
Marketing wizards?
Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey everyone, just letting you know that next weekend we'll be back in Sydney performing at the Sydney Comedy Fest. We've been able to convince Zoe and Gabe that Sydney is a nice place not full of demon bin chickens that will steal your soul just as quick as it'd steal a chip out of your hands. We're on stage for two nights only. Each night is a different show, so come on down and see our only shows in Sydney for 2017. Tickets are available for purchase from our website. Just head to sanspantsradio.com/live and we'll see your handsome faces there. And also, we've launched a brand new podcast, Movie Maintenance Presents, our first foray into radio dramas. The bugger lugs behind this podcast, unable to sit still, have gone and brought some of their screenplays to life in the form of monthly audio plays. The first being Gabe Springsteen biopic. So go have a listen to that, as well as the interview with the cast, available now on iTunes and wherever all good podcasts are found. It's basically just iTunes, really.
Welcome back to another episode of Movie Maintenance. I'm Damien.
I'm Sean.
I'm Handsome Tom.
And this week we're asking, does three-act structure matter?
Yes.
Done.
We're
right.
Done.
Thanks for joining us.
Okay, on that note.
Three is a magic number. Yes, it is. It's a magic number. Somewhere in the ancient mystic trinity.
Okay, yes. I think maybe to sort of maybe unpack the question better is, what do you need three-act structure for? Like, do you need to adhere to it so much?
I agree.
Not necessarily does it matter, but do you need it? You have to use it, I guess.
Exactly.
If you're a writer out there, and there are writers out there who are like, oh, I don't use it.
Well, there's writers in here. So we're sort of uniquely placed to, I guess, talk about the way we approach it.
Are you both writers?
Oh, this is kind of awkward.
Oh, yeah. I'm a cartographer. I draw maps for a living.
Your maps would be garbage.
Hey, my sense of direction is pretty good.
Is it?
No, it's not.
Well, because basic three-act structure is essentially a beginning, middle, and end.
Right.
And like every story that sort of happens to you in life has a beginning, middle, and end. So we just naturally sort of go there.
That doesn't mean you can't fuck with it, though, and put the middle at the end.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's where you get cool stories.
That's the thing, like the way we tell stories, you almost can't help but do it in three-act structure, because we've learnt to do that since day one.
It's like a safety net, right?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly right. Should we quickly describe what it is, like the key elements of it?
Yeah.
So three acts, like Sean said, beginning, middle, and end, act one, act two, act three. And the basic rundown is act one is your setup. Act two is your confrontation, and act three is your resolution. So in act one, you're setting up your world, you're setting up your characters, you're setting up what their goal is.
Yep.
And then usually you have the inciting incident, which is something that kicks the whole story off. And then the end of act one, it's the character enters a new world. In the movie The Martian, he goes to Mars. He literally goes to a new world.
Yep.
Or it can just be a new world where a loved one of theirs has died. Now they're living in a world where that person doesn't exist anymore.
Or even like something like Lord of the Rings, where Frodo starts in the Shire and then he sets off into the new world
exactly.
on the journey.
The new world is all the rest of
Titanic,
it.
Jack wins that ticket onto the Titanic. He's in the new world. He's on a boat.
Spot Perfect. On.
It's literally just taking them from where it's literally just taking them out of the status quo, which could be, like you said. And this is the thing, is that a lot of these books you read or you hear things, people assume that they have to go on some kind of quest.
Yeah. Right.
It can literally be that their dad dies and their new world now is a world that does not have their dad. Or they win $10,000 and the new world now is that they just have $10,000.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's just that change of circumstances, essentially.
Yeah, like Social Network, it's him getting dumped in the restaurant is the inciting incident.
Yeah.
Because his new world now is a world where he's single and questioning who he is as a person.
Mm.
And that causes him to invent Facebook and
get
sued by all his friends and be best friends with Justin Timberlake. What a lie. Sorry, Damo.
No, you're right, mate. But then, so after that transition to the new world, we've got Act Two, which is typically the longest. And this is basically them going out to achieve a goal that is stemmed from the inciting incident. So Zuckerberg, he's been dumped. He's basically trying to, get his self-esteem back, really. Yep. And we sort of have a rising escalation. We've sort of got try-fail cycles where the protagonist tries something, fails, tries something else, something a bit more extreme, and cycles onwards and upwards. In the middle of that, of the second act, we've got the midpoint, unsurprisingly middle of the film. The way I view this one is that it's when the character achieves their initial want and then has to deal with the consequences of that. So Zuckerberg, midpoint, Facebook has taken off.
Yep.
He's done it. He's undeniably cool and popular.
I like how you just jumped on this social network train.
Because it's there. Like, that's the whole thing.
Well, it's Sorkin. He just gets it. Like,
he's a classic for it. Yeah.
We mentioned James Cameron before. He often his scripts don't, get heralded because the dialogue's a little shaky sometimes, if we can be honest. But structurally,
what are you talking about? Adaptanium is a perfectly logical plot point.
But James Cameron really gets structure.
Yeah.
And no that's doubt. Why his film works. And that's why when people pay shitloads of money.
And that's why they're crowd favorites. That's it. Because they hit every point. There's that internal weirdness in us that love that structure.
Yeah.
And when we're watching a film, we want all those plot points to be hit.
It's that vague sense, isn't it, as an audience member where you watch it and you go, this is just working.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And when something is off with the structure, sometimes you might not be able to understand what it is, but you kind of go, movie just didn't do it for me.
Yeah, exactly right.
And the flip side of that, though, is obviously films that toy with structure. So they might have a non-linear narrative.
Yes.
The story's told in reverse. The story's told out of sequence. So there's a film. So the film called Mr. Nobody with Jared Leto in it. I hate Jared Leto, but the film's quite good. But what it does is it's very non-linear. It is still working within three-act structure.
Yeah.
And you can tell that what they've done is they've started, it's kind of polled at each end with a key start and a key end.
Right.
But in the middle, they've kind of just taken all the bits and rearranged them. But if you put them in order, they're still running in a linear. I'm really trying to think of a film now that where the structure is just non-existent to the point where you almost don't feel like you're watching. I keep going, what's David Lynch done recently? Mulholland Drive's pretty out there in terms of structure.
Okay. Yeah.
But there are still beats of a three-act structure
exactly.
in there.
Yeah.
Well, that's the principle of using it but then like tweaking it. Like once you know the rules then you can bend them and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you got to know them first.
Absolutely.
You do, So finish this off.
Sorry, Damo.
No, you're right. Midpoint, we've achieved our goal. We've got to deal with the consequences of it. And the end of the second act is when we've got everything kind of goes to shit. It's that really point of the movie where everything's crap, everything's shit for the protagonist, and you're like, oh, my God, how are they
going to
get out of this
one? Unless it's a tragedy, in which case this is the moment where everything seems to be going well.
Everything somehow worked out, but we've still got 20 minutes of the movie left.
So
if
you're watching a film and that happens, the film's either been written by Gabe or it's a tragedy. So you look at Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
They get together.
Yeah.
They're going to be together at the end of the third act.
Exactly,
You know, West Side Story, they have that beautiful dream sequence together where it's we're going to succeed, and then the rest of the third act carries on and
tragedy and shit.
Oh boy.
Yes.
Oh boy. Were they wrong? So sorry. Again, I think that should be the hashtag for the episode. Sorry, Damo.
So sorry.
You're just too polite.
I've got to start talking over you more.
Yeah.
So, end of the second act, everything's gone to shit, and then we have a glimmer of hope, something for non-tragedies, this is. Something good happens, or the character realizes the thing they were meant to realize, and all of a sudden they can solve the problem.
On your second act turn, where you have a glimmer of hope, as you talk about, there's that quote, you're sitting in the gutter, but you happen to notice the stars.
Sure. Yeah,
that's the moment of hope.
Yes.
For any film, basically the end of act two, something needs to happen where they're either not where they need to be by the end, whether that's a happy ending or a tragic ending, and there is a hint of where that ending is supposed to be.
Yeah.
So for Romeo and Juliet, it's the hint that there's this like war brewing on still with all the families hating on the fact that they're together.
Yeah.
There's all those things that are still there in the background. So it's more like I'm sitting in a beautiful couch, but there's a spring digging into my back. What's happening? And then it all goes to shit.
Yeah.
It's if you really want to talk about people who nail the shit out of structure, Pixar. So it's the bit in Up where he sits down, Carl gets to the island, the South America where he wants to be on the mountains.
Yeah.
He sits down and he opens the book to reminisce about him and Ali, and he turns the page and he realizes that he's already done it, and his actual, the thing that matters most to him is back in that cave, and I've got to go save them. And that's... Yeah.
Well, isn't that the beauty of like Pixar films with that beautiful structure, is that often it's the thing that the character set out to get is not the thing they end up getting, but they realize that what they get instead is what they needed.
You could apply this to every Pixar film and you could nail the moment where every character realizes... So for Inside Out, it's the beat where Joy realizes that you actually need sadness to function.
Yeah,
beautiful moment.
And she realizes that I needed sadness all this time, and she gets out of that pit and she chases after sadness. Like that's
finding Nemo. Marlin realizes that Nemo can do it on his own. Correct. And he has to let him do it. In fact, to succeed, and off he goes and saves
the day.
Those films are structured within like an inch of their life.
It's beautifully ridiculous. So. But then, like, they're a good example of. Yes, there's structure, but each movie is so unique and different from the other, but the same beats are always there.
Yep.
Because that's how it works.
And like that's the argument. People go, oh, but you know, you can't tell an interesting story by just following the same beat. If you literally put every single Pixar film back to back and boil down their plot points to just protagonist and then event and then resolution, they would be identical.
They've been doing it for like 15 years.
Disney are the same. Like you're good storytellers. Either know the rules so well that when they tell it, you don't realize they're using the rules, or they know the rules so well that they can bend with them. They can change them. They can do Pulp Fiction.
Exactly.
They can do that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think you need structure. I find that I do when I write. I approach it very meticulously and break it down quite a bit. So
you're a cue card, aren't you?
I'm a cue card man. I like having a big cork board to pin things up on.
Can you say like cork board again?
Cork board. Ooh. A bit like... A bit like a serial killer. I even get the string out sometimes and start like connecting the dots. And
Your hobbies for murdering people and writing just sometimes intersect.
Sometimes it meshes.
I don't particularly like you when you're in structure mode because you get this gleam in your eye. Psychotic.
I've seen you when there have been no cue cards available.
Oh, yeah.
Rule up and tear a cardboard box.
Yeah, it was a slab of Coopers, I think. I cut it up into cue cards.
Cue cards to
use. The time, we were having like a writer's retreat thing. The time, there wasn't a shop open that had like cue cards that I needed.
That's a real survival man kind of tactic there.
So, you know, Gabe drank a lot of beer and I was able to profit from that and use the cardboard from that.
Yeah, the big rules of structure.
Sometimes you got to do what you got to do. It didn't work on that particular story.
It did.
I can't remember which one it was. But no, I like to use cue cards. And I guess I like to sort of visually map out what the story is and
the key beats,
where
and
each character is sitting throughout the acts and that sort of thing. But, I mean, there are obviously different approaches to structure. I'm sure you've got a different one, Tom.
Well, surprising no one in this room, I'm a little bit more slapdash.
What?
Thomas Reed. I even have key beats in my head, right? I know that I need to land at this moment, at some point in the story. It needs to end here. Therefore, I need to include this. But really, and this is something that I've only just started doing recently. I just kind of dive in and then get angry with myself, is that recently I've just been diving in and just finish it, get to the end.
Yeah.
Because a lot of it is bullshit.
Yep.
And then you can go back and you can fix it later. But I do what you do, but without the cue cards, I just kind of go, right, I know that I need this to happen, and this to happen. And I know I usually have in my head a very clear idea of possibly an end beat.
Yeah.
The final scene, I have that clear in my head. So I just go, right, how do I get there? And then I just kind of muddle my way through it.
That's kind of crucial to me, I think, because I think this is where structure comes in handy, because often people come up with a premise and they kind of know what the end beat is or what, you know, the final scene is, how they want to end it. But it's the stuff in the middle that you get muddy on.
Second act.
Yeah.
When we get into it, but the second act is the
Yeah, it definitely is. And that's worst. Where I think, yes, you do need structure. Mm. Well, not every, I'm just purely for me, I need structure in that second act.
Now, I want to clarify, that's not, I'm not saying that you don't need to use structure. Mm. My issue is if I start, you know, using those books and those guidebooks and those, I need to have this incident at this point and I need to map it out, I just start losing the plot.
Yeah, because you can really get stuck into that headspace of, because I can't think of ones off the top of my head, but there's a bunch of different books about structure and writing. It's like by page 28, you need to have this happen, and by this, you know, and you just, whatever works for you, that's the sort of system that you go for. I'll kind of go the opposite to you. I'm like, I use structure, but if you don't want to use it and somehow, but Charlie Kaufman doesn't use structure, does he?
Well, no. He's famously against structure.
Even if it's still present.
Dissuades the whole idea of the three-act structure.
But if you watch any of his films, they follow three-act structure.
It's absolutely. Like, I rewatched Adaptation recently. Have you guys seen that one?
Yeah.
And it even has a section in it where he goes and visits, you know, Robert McKee and goes to a seminar. And it's very heavy on structure. Like, he's actively fighting against it, but it's just so present.
It's so there. And, like, Robert McKee is one of the first ones with his book Story.
Yeah.
He's got it down to, like, the amount of pages you should have per act. Like, it's
that shits me.
I agree. Yeah. See, it can be very confining in a way, and I think that's what people have against it, is they're like, well, when do I get to be creative if it's telling me exactly what to do at every point?
Yeah.
But I don't know, like most good things, if you work within those boundaries, that's when you can actually have some real positive writing happening.
Well, that's how I ended up sort of getting into writing, because when I was at film school years ago, I ended up sort of producing a lot of the projects and just hated the paperwork aspect of it. And when you read stuff like Robert McKee's structure ideas and everything, that's what it feels like to me. It feels like homework. It feels like you must be at the inciting incident by this page.
Yes.
You must be at the first act turn by this page. Yeah. It's like, no, you just kind of like, you get there when you get there and then like you rewrite and you structure it.
And stories naturally hit those beats though. There's a guy, John York, right?
Yes.
Who writes a lot on structure. We're going to get into him in a bit, because he says that there are five acts instead of the traditional three. I did a thing in Sydney once writing a TV series.
Yep.
John York was like our mentor for it. But his whole thing is that even in the stories that we tell our friends, and he talks about myth and about like oral histories of things, they still hit three-act structure. So if you're telling a story about a crazy weekend to your mate, there is still three-act structure in that.
So it's not about is being hard and fast and sticking to the rules, in quotation marks. It's about writing the story you want to write, and if you need help writing it, that's when you knowing the structure can really help.
Yeah.
And that's to sort of complete how we each do it. That's sort of how I do it. I usually get an idea, I'll start writing it and not be thinking of structure at all.
Yep.
I usually maybe have theme on my mind or what my character wants, but that's more about knowing your endpoint anyway. And it's when I get stuck that I think, okay, I'll go to structure and be like, all right, what's my initial want? That should go in the middle somewhere. That's my midpoint. Yep. They achieve it. They've got to deal with the consequences of it.
Damon, can I ask, do you tend to just sort of do like a what we call a vomit draft, I guess, and then go back through it and go, all right, is this fitting into the structure? Is this
hitting
the theme that I want?
I do like 2/3 of a vomit draft.
Yep.
And then I'll do that. Okay. It's usually got to a point where I'm starting to hate it a little bit. And I'm why am I hating this now? I was having such fun. And that's gone. And then I think, and then usually that does help, because I've gone, okay, yeah, here's a problem, because I kind of, this part that I thought was going to be way at the end, no, that's actually the middle. Bring that back.
Okay, yep.
And then have some extra stuff in there. Oh, that fixes it.
Yep.
And that then I have a lot more fun. Or other ones, you can do the whole vomit draft, that first draft. Then you look at your three-act structure. And then often it's in there anyway. Like, I mean, I think that's what we're saying, is you almost can't help but have three-act structure in your story.
It's subconsciously just
it's human nature.
Yeah.
As we're talking before, we're talking about spoken word and myths. You look at any story from any culture, whether it's, you know, a Bible story, the story of Hercules or anything like that. Even if you looked at like in Australia, like indigenous dream song, dreamtime stories, they would all follow a three-act structure of there is status quo, someone does something, usually someone does something they shouldn't, redeems themselves, here's the outcome, or continues to do it, punishment.
Yep.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Particularly in fairy tales and like old myths, which we used to serve. Yeah. Be like, don't put your hand in the cookie jar.
Right.
Freddy did that, and now Freddy's got no hands. that was one my grandma told me a lot.
Really?
Yeah. No hand, Freddy. No.
That was a tragedy.
Yeah.
At that second act turn, Freddy thought, I'm keeping all my fingers. Well, watch out, Freddy.
Damo, that point you made where you sort of get 2/3 of the way through and then you kind of start to hate it a bit.
Yeah.
I try and avoid that by doing the work sort of beforehand. And if I've figured it out, I find I don't get to that part of the story where I'm like, because is it for you, is it kind of like a what happens next moment, or is it like a...
Yeah. There's sort of two ways to write in my mind. There's discovery writing where that's kind of what you do, Tom.
Yeah.
You don't really know where the story's going. You're like, I'm going to find out as I write it.
I've killed characters that I was like, I really like this character, I'm going to keep them alive. And I get 14 bits in and I'm like, ooh, no, you need to die here.
Yes.
Or you write yourself into a corner and go, ooh, ooh, blow the hotel up.
You sent me late night messages to be like, Sean, I just had to kill him.
Remember we were all doing NaNoWriMo in the last year, so National Writing Month, which even if you don't finish it, it's just good to do because it forces you to do something. There were points in that where I get to a bit and I was like, ooh, I don't really know what to do here. I'm going to change characters and I've got to kill someone. And it's
when in doubt,
it's
kill someone.
When in doubt, kill someone. My approach is that when I get to those bits where I'm either hating it, I just walk away and don't work on it.
Yeah.
I don't think about the structure of it. And then what happens is I'll go back through. Mm. So I've recently gone back to this particular story that we're talking about and I've gone, wow, my first act just ends really abruptly for no reason. I need another 10 pages of first act.
Yes.
Because it's just like, it's something incident happens, he's like, okay, and off they go. And I'm like, oh, there's a big leap. There's nothing really dragging him into this new world. So I've had to go back and rewrite it. And that's where I come from. And I discover what I'm doing as I'm doing it. And then you go back.
Exactly, yeah.
And start to refine.
You're a discovery writer, Sean. You're more of a plotter. You want to plot all from start. And this is a spectrum. So basically those are the two ends. Most people really are
Sean, you're on
the
spectrum.
I am indeed.
Yeah, you're very far down the end of the spectrum. Right? Don't worry about that. I'm somewhere pretty much in the middle. I'll start discovery writing, go... oh, I don't know what to do, and I'll jump onto my notes page. I'll plot it out, plot out the next bit, discovery right to that point, do it again, sort of plotting my way forward bit by bit.
On just so we're sort of at this point and we're talking about those bits where you don't know what you're going to do next. Hmm. I was just thinking about films that we often talk about on the show that we don't like or that just don't work, and I'm going to just go straight to Suicide Squad as a perfect example.
Great.
We've all seen it. Everyone knows it's garbage. You look at that film, pick it apart in terms of structure. It is a mess.
Oh, yeah.
Horrific.
It starts 8 times. Mm-hmm. It finishes 4 times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The second act is probably the most well put together. The problem is that the two bits at the start are just a mess.
Yeah.
And there's actually...
it's already lost you by that point.
It's already lost you by that point. And there's too many stories going on at once. So there's
The setup is horrific. You don't know what your character wants. And if you don't have... as soon as you don't have a want... what's the point of telling the story?
Correct.
It doesn't really have a grounding character either.
No.
And then look, you don't have to have a protagonist for a story to work. You can have multiple protagonists. Yep. You can have no protagonists. But you still need something for the audience to go with. And in films that are often weaker, they rush it. They treat the audience like they're idiots or they don't know what story they're trying to tell. So they tell too many.
Yes.
And that's where you get things like Suicide Squad, BVS.
Apocalypse.
Yeah.
It's like a big part of structural deficiencies of those films we just mentioned are protagonist.
Right.
Like, I mean, it's everything to do with structure, but like first and foremost, when you do a team up, you still need to have like a sort of a grounding figure for the audience.
Yeah. Civil War. Look at that. Exactly. Yeah.
You know, I'm just realizing most of our movie maintenances are just picking apart where the structure's gone wrong
and
writing it.
Yeah.
And that's how structure can help.
Yep.
That is the definition of it right there. It's not about adhering to it perfectly. It's about finding what's gone wrong when you're reading something and you're like, something's not right here. I'll look at the structure, and that's usually how you figure it out.
For me, it's the most important thing you have to get right in a story. Because if the structure works, then everything else just does. In a lot of ways, getting structure correct is more important than dialogue.
Yeah.
Because, using James Cameron, he gets structure and character right. He doesn't always hit a home run with dialogue.
No.
But he gets the important stuff.
Yes.
And this is the thing. The reason I love character, and I often start at character and work my way into story that way. I'm like, this is an interesting character. What can I do with them? But I think if your structure is tight and sound, your characters will also be reasonably tight and sound, and any maintenance or fix you need to do on your characters as you go will be easier if the structure is strong, because their whole function and purpose
in life is hinged upon what function do they serve the structure of the story.
Yep.
And if they're the main character, then the structure of the story is built completely around them. And if they're periphery characters, well, then they just feed into one another so well. So that, and again, even if you're going for non-linear structures, even if you're taking structure and stitching it apart all over the shop, you're still having to adhere to those rules to make your characters strong. Your characters will not be strong if the structure's not there.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Structure sort of feeds into like understanding the world of your story as well. And again, when you use examples like Suicide Squad and BVS and basically anything they're doing with DC and that sort of thing, they don't really have like a handle on the world building aspects of it. And then that's when you see the holes in their structure.
It can very quickly apparent as soon as that's the case. And that, like, that's the thing. You don't even need to be thinking about it as you're writing it. Tom, obviously you don't really do that so much. And you might write a first draft and the structure could be perfect. Yeah. Just because it's just come out that way naturally, and that's awesome if that happens. But if it's not, that's where you can look at structure.
Yeah. So I like how I agreed with you. Like, I often write perfect drafts.
Second draft, never heard of it.
First draft, talk about actual copy.
So, guys, for me, when I approach a story, I know that I have to follow structure because I just know that I'll break apart in that what is traditionally known as the second act.
Yes.
So if we talk about traditional three-act structure, I generally have a premise, a concept of what I want to do, and I generally know how I want it to end.
So you've got first act, third act.
And it's, and it's that stuff in the middle, which is always like, I think a lot of people find this. A lot of people start writing a novel, writing a screenplay, and then you get to that slog in the middle and you're like, oh, what? What happens?
Do any of you just go, oh, I wish someone else would do this bit?
Yeah. Can I get to the fun bit?
Oh, how do they get this bit done?
So for me, and this plays into John York, who wrote the book Into the Woods.
Yep.
Yes. Read it. It's a great book.
It's a really good book. He talks about five-act structure and that. And that, I swear, I only use five-act structure now. Mm. It's like, if I didn't have it, I'd be like, what am I doing?
What's the difference between five-act and three-act?
Okay, five-act is literally three-act structure, but what they've done is they've broken up that second act in the middle into three pieces. Ah. So your first act is still the same. It's still the setup of your story.
Yep.
And the final act is still the same. It's the resolution, climax. But it's instead of just having act two in the middle, you now have act two, three, and four. Act two is the success, which is when they initially set out on the quest or whatever the thing is.
Yes.
And things are going well. It's like, it's pretty good. It's a new world. It's exciting. Act three is what you call the problem section. That's when little things start to build and the perfect thing that was happening is sort of not as perfect anymore and things are starting to sort of go wrong. And then you hit into act four, which is the disaster, which is your kind of all is lost moment where everything's as bad as it possibly could be, which leads you into resolution.
Or you turn that on its head for a tragedy.
Yeah,
yes, absolutely. All is lost, problems, solution, still problems.
Yeah. So for me, the beauty of the five-act structure is you, instead of having, because if you just do it in three, normally, let's talk about a screenplay, they tend to say, say it's 90 pages.
Yep.
You would do probably 20 for act one, 20 for the end, and then there's that big chunk in the middle. Yeah. And so sometimes you look at it and you go, oh, it's such a big chunk. I've got to break up so many sequences and scenes and stuff. So if you do it into three, it's kind of like, all right, success, problems, disaster, and for me it works.
And the interesting thing is, basically, every time you break it down into another, it usually breaks into thirds, so you've broken that second act into thirds, and each one of those thirds is going to have a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Yep, absolutely.
Like, it's there on every level.
So many threes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's the thing, and we can't help but tell it. So you break that first act, that can be broken down into three parts. Same for the final act. It just continually gets broken down into beginning, middle, and end.
The interesting thing about it too is once you sort of start to have a bit of an understanding of structure, you'll see it in even things like TV shows.
Yeah,
obviously, within an episode, like take Breaking Bad, for instance, you will see, I think they use five-act structure in it, but I mean, it's three, five, same deal. Yep. It's just the way you approach it.
Right. Correct.
You see that structure within an episode, but you also see that structure across the course of a season arc.
Yeah. And then also over a series.
A series arc.
People often, and I'm sure you guys the same question, you guys study structure, you study film, and we've often had people tweet us and ask us these questions on Reddit and stuff.
Sure.
Does it mean you hate films now? And it's like, well, no, good films, if you start studying structure and you start to understand how stories are put together, you will enjoy good and well-written films more. Yeah.
Couldn't agree more.
I'll tell you this.
Won't be able to cop bullshit as easier, though.
That's true. Yes. When I'm in a cinema, if a film is just a little bit off, I start to get in my head a bit and I'm kind of like, oh, whether it's like analysing what's wrong with it or sometimes like just by virtue of doing this show, sometimes you immediately start to think, oh, how would I fix this movie?
Yes.
But if a film is good and it's working on pretty much every level, we still lose ourselves in the escapism of a film.
It's not until afterwards that you're analyzing it and you're like,
holy shit.
Yeah.
That was amazing to watch. And now analyzing, it's even more amazing because I can see how they've done it and they've nailed it.
Because I think people have tweeted Gabe before and been like, oh, you just don't enjoy films, or how can you enjoy films?
Like, well, Gabe he does. No, I'm kidding. He does.
He loves cinema. When a film kind of works for him, he just gets lost in it. He doesn't really like analyze it.
We're all the same. And, and it's because if you enjoy that structure and you – well, not enjoy. If you studying structure and getting an understanding of structure just means that you aren't – you recognize good stuff.
Yeah.
It's like if you're a chef, right, and you know how to cook good food, when you have bad food, you notice it more. But when you have good food, oh, my God.
Yeah.
You do that thing that George Koulambaris does on MasterChef and you bounce. You know?
For me, when a film is good, it's the best. Like I've been raving to you guys about Train to Busan, the Korean zombie film.
It just
worked for me on every level.
Sure.
And I was just so satisfied at the end of it. And I'm like,
Is it scary though, Sean?
It's got some.
Can't do it.
Yeah, I know. Mate, I'm in the same camp. I can't do horror.
No, I've done lots of horror recently. I'm not doing it anymore for a bit.
You know, Beauty and the Beast has a beast in it. Does that mean you're not going to be able to watch that?
I've seen Beauty and the Beast.
Oh my God. How did you get through that?
It was very scary. Gaston is a scary man.
Gaston is scary.
Gaston is terrifying. Have you not seen the remake?
No.
Are you talking like Luke Evans Gaston?
Yes.
No, he's terrific. Like he's a good.
He is amazing. He is scary though.
Oh, I wouldn't go that far. He's a little bit too goofy to be like.
Nah.
The beast is.
We're going to have
scary.
Words after this.
We'll have words about it. I'll tell you right now. Tell you what scene didn't work for me? Just quickly. When the beast jumped down when she was about to touch the rose and he does his roar thing, I'm like, nah, didn't buy it. Not scared.
I also didn't buy. This is completely off topic. It'll probably get edited out. I also didn't buy. What happened to your mum? I died in the plague. Oh, okay. That's an actual beat that we're hitting in this story. There you go. That's something wrong with the structure. There were beats in that film that didn't land because the structure wasn't right. Oh, I've tied it back in again. It's relevant. Damo, help us pull us out of this hole.
So, okay. Well, I wanted to ask you guys a question. So part of the problem people have with three-act structure, they're like, oh, well, it's immediately predictable. I now know what's going to happen. You know, what's your opinion on that when it comes to structure? We've sort of covered it.
Yeah, but no, because again, like,
fuck you.
Yeah, but no. No, I mean, yeah, we've talked a little bit about it. It's every story is just naturally going to have that structure.
Yeah.
And it's the good ones tweak it, even if it's just a little tweak here and there. And sometimes people do drastic tweaks when you see like a Pulp Fiction or something or a Charlie Kaufman film, even though he doesn't think he's using structure, he definitely is.
And there are more extreme examples. Holy Motors, did anyone see that film from a few years ago?
I've heard about it.
It's really good.
Yeah.
Off the wall and bizarre, but it's quite good. But even in the little vignettes, there's structure to the vignettes.
Yes, I'm trying to think of a film I've seen that just literally doesn't have a structure.
Well, it's almost impossible. Like we've said, you kind of can't help but use structure. If I was to tell you about it, I went to the shops and bought some milk and I fell over and spilled the milk everywhere. I'm going to tell you that story in three-act structure.
Because it'd be like, because what it would be is the three-act structure. So I woke up, there's no milk.
Yep.
Yeah. There's your story. There's your
Yeah.
Milk. So I go out and I go to buy the milk. It's like $5. It's way more expensive than it used to be. And I'm coming home and there's this dog that starts following me and I get really paranoid. So I start running and I trip. I spill the milk everywhere and I get home and I'm just covered in milk. And that's why I smell like milk now.
Yeah.
So that's got it all. That's got your setup, your inciting incident. It's got your disaster, all this lost moment.
I think that's a tragedy.
It is a tragedy because everything's going well and then I become paranoid about that
dog. I had the milk. I lost the milk. Oh, Romeo and Juliet all over again.
Shakespeare, move over. Handsome Tom is here.
but that's it. I mean, like, ultimately, it is repetitious, but we still enjoy movies. So clearly that kind of doesn't matter. And even, you can tweak with it, but even the ones that hit it perfectly, Pixar being a great example, it takes nothing away from it because the story is still different.
I'll tell you the one way that it does get repetitious is when someone like Quentin Tarantino comes along, like back in the 90s, and does Pulp Fiction, and then you get a bunch of people mimicking that.
Yes.
Yeah. When it's a straight up mimic of something, then it's repetitious.
Sure.
But for the majority of films released throughout the year, I don't sit there and watch them and go, oh, this is like really repetitious, blah, blah, blah.
Exactly.
It's great. Another third act turn.
Saw that coming a mile away.
Two into three. Oh, well, I know that it's not over. Oh, great. An inciting. Oh, he's let go of that weather balloon. Well, that's going to come back to bite him. It's only been done for 10 minutes.
I wanted to see him sitting on the couch watching TV for 90 minutes with no structure.
Yeah.
He doesn't learn anything. He doesn't do anything. That's the movie I want
to
see.
Well, so within that, there are films where characters don't learn anything.
Sure.
So you have that whole unlikable anti-protagonist kind of thing.
Sure. Yes.
Yep.
Where even though, and this is an example of following the structure but bending the rules a bit in that the character usually should grow over those three acts.
Yeah.
In some cases, they don't have to. So you can still have the story hit the three-act beats and then they're exactly the same at the end of it. And usually that's usually in a tragic story.
Or a sitcom.
Or a sitcom.
Sitcom, yeah, great
sitcom.
Example, yeah. Seinfeld, they don't change that.
No, they don't change.
But it still hits
They still hit three-act structure. Serialized shows like that are probably okay. But yeah, but in terms of like, so look at Shame, the film with Fassbender in it. Yeah. He plays a sex addict. End of that movie, he's exactly the same man he is at the start.
Yeah.
And you hate him for it. Mm. And that's where the story hits you, is because you see all these things, you see the opportunity for growth, and he doesn't grow. Mm. Therefore, you are affected by that film emotionally, and that's where the structure works for it.
Yeah, exactly right.
That's a good film.
That's an amazing film. Watch Shame.
It's not a film I will watch again.
No, you probably don't need to watch it more than once because it is just hard.
It makes you feel like garbage, but but it's terrifically made garbage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, look at it, analyze the structure,
and
it will be there in a wonderful, wonderful way.
I don't want to look at it again. I don't want to look at Fassbender's penis again. I could probably do without that.
Do you know what, though?
Yeah.
No, I might go back.
I was about to say.
Yeah.
Did you have any more questions, Turbo?
All right. Okay. Well, I do have another more questions. So we've mostly talked about film, but in television, like you said, there are sitcoms a really good one because, yes, it's in the individual episodes. It's not overarching, where you take something like Breaking Bad. Hell yeah, it's overarching. You watch the whole season, you're going to get a beginning, middle, end of that season. Do you guys think it is more – it's probably a dumb question because we've sort of already said it's going to be there regardless.
Yeah.
But when writing film to television, do you think about it – do you think about structure more with TV or with your film?
I actually – this is interesting.
Well, you've developed a TV show, so – what do you
I
got?
Have, apparently. Yeah. That is the example where I'm the opposite.
Okay.
So if I'm writing a standalone story, whether it's a film, play, novel, short story, whatever, if it's condensed, contained, then I don't really think about structure. For TV, I do. And when developing this show, we literally sat in a room for like 5 days going through every episode individually and just talking about how it related back to the overarching story. Mm. So actually – with the overarching narrative of the TV series, I probably approach it in the same way that I approach everything.
Yeah.
And then when you break it down in episodes, you go, right, in this episode, this needs to happen, but then it also needs to be structured in and of itself. That's when you start plotting. And I think because there are so many levels within TV shows and it's a longer form narrative, it needs to go for longer, it needs to keep audiences hooked in for longer.
Yeah.
I think it requires more planning.
Yes.
I agree completely.
Yeah.
I'm big on structure in films anyway, but even more so in TV. Mm. It depends on the TV show, obviously, but of course, for something like a Breaking Bad or, you know, HBO show.
Well,
you're, show
like you said, but you want to keep the audience hooked for years, hopefully, then, that's where structure's your friend.
That's where shows.
That's what's going
to
do it.
That's where shows lose out. Like, you know, when you get to like second, third, fourth season, whatever it may be of a show, and it starts to like fall apart a bit, it's because their structure has fallen apart.
Right.
I don't know what they're doing anymore.
Or they've run out of structure.
Yes.
So Dexter suffered from that hugely in that they got to a point. And Banshee to a lesser extent. No, I only haven't seen season four, but Banshee season four felt like they probably only had 5 episodes in them, really, to wrap everything up.
Right.
But they had to do a whole season, and it's just a couple of episodes too long.
Yeah. Banshee is 3 incredible seasons and 1 finale.
That's what I mean. That's what I mean. So they really –
I was talking to Gabe about it the other day, and he, I think he was saying it should have just been 3 seasons and then like a 2-hour – TV movie to just kind of like tie everything up.
Perfect. Mm. And again, when TV shows start getting weak or when you're not buying into it, it's where their structure's falling apart. They're running out of story to tell. The other trap that I think film franchises are falling into, it's like, we're going to do 18 Power Rangers films. Can I just say, having not seen the new Power Rangers film, I'm still on board for 6 more Power Rangers films.
Yeah. Well, it's frustrating because so King Arthur, the Guy Ritchie film's coming out shortly.
Yes. Yep.
And haven't they already like, we've planned like a universe and there's going to be 7 films. And it's like, I really wish that these studios would just tell one story.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Marvel films, they're just a setup for the next film in the chain. And I just really wish sometimes that we just get like a complete story.
Can I say the only creative mind in history who has successfully said, no, it's like 10 films and has nailed it, Vin Diesel in the Fast and the Furious franchise. I'm not bullshitting either.
Tripped over and tumbled into success, I think, with that.
Originally, he never wanted to do a sequel.
No.
Of his movies.
He wanted to do sequels to Fast and the Furious. He had a whole universe planned out. What, I'm 100% serious.
From the outset. Where did he go on the third one?
I don't know.
Just did a contract.
struggled.
So I'm not going to Tokyo.
He's doing the Japan? Pacifier what? 2, probably. But no, for that, like, they just went in and were like, now we're going to make lots of films.
And in terms of success, that franchise is one of the most successful non-superhero franchises in the world.
Yeah.
And I love it a little bit.
I can't speak too much about Fast and Furious because I've literally seen the first film and the seventh one, but fucking hell. When I saw the seventh one in the cinema, what dragged me to the cinema to see the seventh film in a franchise?
I missed out on these five in the middle.
It was a lot of the emotion attached to the Paul Walker thing and everything, but what a film.
Like, yeah.
Fast and Furious 7 was one of my favorite films of whatever year it came out.
There are weaker entries in the canon. Fast 5, which I think the first one with The Rock in it.
Mm. Is that when it got good or is it just shit?
So good.
Is it?
So good.
Well, because The Rock's in it.
Because The Rock's in it. Rock is also like structure. Because he's just good in everything.
He's a lot of things now. He's structure, he's franchise by
He's a reboot king. He's everything.
Can't wait for Baywatch, just quietly.
Oh, it's my movie of 2017. Yeah. Hopefully
that's from Justice League, right?
Definitely just Baywatch. Okay. And maybe Chips, because I love a good 80s reboot.
Yeah, I'm a bit excited for Chips.
Having seen the trailer for Baywatch, I do feel like that will have a nice structure. Whereas you watch something like... and
Comedies are like sitcoms. They hide the structure at all.
No, it's right there.
Can be weak, but who cares, because you're having fun. It's sort of... less important, arguably.
Well, see, I think there's been a trend lately where the Seinfeld structure, where no one really learns anything and they don't really develop, doesn't work anymore.
Yeah.
I recently watched How I Met Your Mother, and it's really hard to watch because the characters just at the end of the episode are the same. Yes, there's little bits of growth, but Ted will always Ted. Yeah. Jason Segel always be like, they'll always be the same. Barney will always be Barney.
Well, it gets to a point with Barney where it becomes uncomfortable now.
It does. Like,
it does. You can't buy this anymore.
You can't have those characters in shows
anymore.
How
many seasons did that show run for?
Seven, I think.
I think I got to like four or five and I started to just actively be aware of like, this isn't working anymore.
Yes. Whereas I want to bring up Parks and Rec, because for me, Parks and Rec is one of the greatest comedy shows on TV.
Agreed.
Because it does two things. Yes, it hits the comedy beats, and when the show starts out, we understand that Ron Swanson's character is going to respond in this scenario to this scenario, and that's where the comedy lies.
Yeah.
But then every now and again, they give you character development.
Yep. Yes, they grow.
And if you sit with that show for the full seasons, by season four, Ron Swanson is a different man to season two, but not completely.
No.
He still hates vegetables.
Yeah.
He still doesn't like handshakes that are weak.
You know what I love more than anything in Parks and Rec? A bit of a Ron Swanson giggle.
Oh, yes.
Do you know what's the best? That's how Nick Offerman actually laughs.
That's so good.
Yeah. But there you go. And that's where you see an example of, if someone says to you, oh, but then it gets boring and hackneyed.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
If you dribble just bits of character development over the top of that structure, if you do something good over the top of the bare bones structure, you get a masterclass of something.
Yes. And to follow on from that, so basically you're saying they do change, but they change a little bit. And that's totally allowed. Your character doesn't have to be a different person from when you started.
No.
They've just have to have had a bit of a journey, and that journey has changed them in some way. It can be really small, but it's changed them some way. And then the other thing from that is, basically, once they have changed, keep it consistent.
Yeah.
And now go, okay, well, because of that change, what comes next? And I think that's what Parks and Rec does really well. So let's say Leslie Knope, she's basically calmed down the crazy. Well, now she can actually have a long-term boyfriend because she's not going to be all crazy about it. So she does. Okay, that's what's changed. We've got a whole new story arc there.
And then you get comedy again, though, by being like, what if we bring back crazy Leslie for a bit? Give her something that'll make her crazy.
Yeah, because she hasn't completely changed.
Yeah.
While we've got three Parks and Rec nuts in the room, that's a pretty good one to talk about, because that show started out very slowly.
Oh, yeah.
To the point where it probably was on the verge of cancellation. And then at some point, about halfway through season three, I think it was.
Well, no. So what happened was at the end of season one, they went back and did a major rewrite of a whole bunch of characters based on feedback.
Yes.
And you watch season two to season one. I tell people when they watch Parks and Rec, just start season two.
Agreed.
Season one's got some great moments.
It's only six episodes.
So one of the biggest complaints is people are like, Leslie's too one-dimensional. She's an idiot. How did she get to be where she's an idiot?
Yeah.
They approached it as like she was going to be like, what's his name in The Office?
She's a Michael Scott.
And then it didn't work.
Because she's not Michael Scott.
But
she's capable. She's good at her job.
Yep. What an interesting show, though, because that, for all intents and purposes, looked like a show that just wasn't going to go anywhere. And it literally, for me, it became like almost my favorite comedy show.
I will say this. As a comedy, I've cried watching that show twice.
Yep.
What moments?
Because
I wonder if they match up with mine.
When she wins the election.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. What a season that was. Oh, my God.
Just the beat where Rashida Jones comes back in and does the fake, you lost.
Yeah.
No, actually, you won. And you're like, that's what a real person would do.
Yes. Yeah.
And
and they get married.
That
when
episode,
Leslie gets married and Ron's there and Ron episode, cries.
Ron,
but he gives her away. Sean, are you okay?
No. It destroyed me.
Oh,
yeah.
That, what a show.
Full of heart.
That's so the episode go. Where he like punches Jeremy Jam in the face, right?
Yeah. And then walks her down the aisle.
He's so fucking cool when he does it.
What's interesting about that show is that and particularly with TV, again, the minute planning that goes into the structure of that. There's an A plot, a B plot, and a C plot in most TV shows. And most TV sitcoms, they all have a three-act structure to them.
Oh, yeah.
And the C plot could be 5 minutes of the show when you see it in its entirety. And it could just be, for example, in Parks and Rec, Aubrey Plaza just hating something and then finding a better way to do it.
Yeah.
And it could be three scenes of that.
Yeah.
But that's still three-act structure within three-act structure. Within three-act structure. Within three-act structure. Within the overarching series narrative.
Yeah.
It's Inception.
guys,
can't escape it.
I think we've probably answered the question.
Yeah.
From the start.
Yes. I think it's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
It's there whether you want it or not. So you might as well learn about it because it could help you one day.
And then use it to your advantage. Use it to your advantage. You know.
It could end up saving your life, guys.
It really could.
On that note, I've been Damien.
I've been Sean.
I've been Handsome Tom.
And if you have any thoughts or ideas or opinions on three-act structure, you can email us at sanspantsradio@gmail.com or hit us up on Twitter at sanspantsradio or our individual Twitters. I'm at Midday Pajamas. Somewhere
I'm at Sidekick of Dowie.
I'm at Awkward Tree.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Bye.
There's a magic number. The past and the present and the future. Faith and hope and charity. The heart and the brain and the body give you three. There's a magic number.
Thanks for listening. If you want to help support the show, why not become a member at sanspantsplus.com and get early access to our shows, a bunch of exclusive content, and much, much more. That's sanspantsplus.com.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.